Welcome to part one of a four-part series of the story of this man, Peter Wythe, Aston Villa's most important ever player, certainly most significant. He scored the winning goal in the European Cup final in Rotterdam, and of course, so many goals in Aston Villa's League Championship campaign. But his career started in rather humble surroundings, with nine clubs in as many years through many, many continents, three in all. We start with how it all began for Peter Wythe when I sat down with him at his home in the UK. Your life story for your book, which is coming out. Peter, let's start right at the beginning. You were born in Liverpool, and indeed you started your career locally as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah. We ended up, I had two older brothers who were football mad as well, mainly because of my father, really. My dad was the one who we used to go in the park with and kick a ball around, and he was a bit of a semi-pro until the war. So that's what really kicked us in. And then we'd written to local clubs, but never really got anywhere. Had a couple of trials, but never materialised.
Trials with Liverpool and Everton?
No, trials with Salt Liverpool, which is non-league teams and teams like that. So we didn't really make it, as it were. And then I was an electrician on the docks in Liverpool, and we used to go to college once a week. Funnily enough, in Stanley Park, we used to go over to Stanley Park, which was the, you know, in between Everton and Liverpool, throw some coats down as you did in Liverpool in them days, and just have a game of football. So there was, you know, a class, as it were. And one of the players who was studying with me doing the electrician was a fellow called Peter Duffy. And he said to me, "You're actually quite good, you know." So I said to him, "Yeah, yeah." He said, "Don, you got a team?" So I said, "Nah, I've had all that, you know, never really materialised." And he was on Everton's books as an apprentice, but then broke his leg and ended up playing for Southport. So that's how it started, really. He got me to write to Southport, to have a trial, to go to Southport, and that's how I got started in football.
So this is like a theme of your career, because, you know, it took you a while to get up to the sort of elite level. This sort of idea that you had a steady career outside of football, now I'm not going to play them, we'll see how it goes. This actually sort of put you back a few years in your professional career. It didn't really kick off until you were sort of in your mid-20s.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't sign professional forms until, funnily enough, Jason, my son, was born on the 16th of August, 1971. I signed a professional three-month contract with Southport on the same day. That was my first training session. So I'd gone to I'd gone to watch Jason being born, and then went straight from there to the training. So it was sort of one of them sort of situations that I couldn't miss training. It didn't matter in them days. It didn't matter whether, you know, kids were, your wife was having babies or anything. You just went training. So that was my first training session. So that was the start. Didn't really... It was Alec Parker, who I used to watch as an Everton supporter on the terrace, and he was a fullback to play for Everton, and he was the manager at the time. And that's really how my career started with Southport. I ended up playing for Southport as an amateur player because I took time off work to go and train for a couple of weeks, and I was a bit of a fitness fanatic. And we used to train on the beach, and I used to go running forever and a day. So that's how it started, really. And then I didn't get signed. There was a manager got changed, and this was throughout my career. This happened to me quite a lot. Manager changed. Alec Parker got sacked. A fella called new manager took over. He didn't know me, so he didn't really want to take me on. Jimmy Meadows, his name was. And then in the end, I left there and had an offer to go to South Africa. And everyone was saying to me, "But you've never been out of Liverpool." And I went, "Yeah, I know. But it's an opportunity to play football." And I took the opportunity. And all credit to Kathy, my wife. She just said, "We've got nothing here. Let's go." And we had a six-month-old baby at the time, so that was it. We went to South Africa. We ended up playing out there, played 12 months. Kathy hated it, not because of the apartheid, just and it was a lovely country. It was a great country, but she'd been out, never been out of Liverpool, you know, all the family, all the friends and everything, and I'd drag her 6,000 miles.
You touched on that there, Peter. I mean, it's not the country it was today. I mean, it was an apartheid dictatorship. I mean, what was it like to play in that environment? It was so conscious of race there, suddenly.
It was hard for the simple reason is that coming from where we came from and you're seeing what you're seeing and you're trying to be different, so you're trying to be what we call fair, and saying, you know, you can't sort of treat people like that, and you try to treat people how you treat anyone. But there was this, you know, like they couldn't come in. They could come in the stadium, but they had to be in a segregated area. But the rules stated that they couldn't go and watch a white game of football. So it was difficult, and we got through a lot of sort of situations, like my wife, myself. You just had to blend in with it, really, you know. But what you try to do, you're always conscious to try and be what you would be as a person, you know, not as anyone else. So we tried to do that.
From a footballing point of view, this was such a complaint of that era. If you were an English player and you were playing in a far-flung continent, another country, you were off the radar. So at some point, you wanted to return home. How did you get your career back on track in England? When you were away so long, I mean, you spent time in America as well.
Well, when I was in South Africa, I had probably 20 months out in South Africa. And it was only through a chance that Derek Dugan had came out to guest for us and play for us. And then there was a lad called Malcolm Allison, the coach at the time, who brought, you couldn't take a team. You actually couldn't take a team. So Everton, Liverpool, any of these clubs couldn't go to South Africa and play. So they got round it a little bit. What they did is they took players and assigned them to various teams. So they had 11 players, like we had Derek Dugan and Rodney Marsh playing up front. So we had a forward line of 18'6", I think it was, that we played in one game. And yours truly was the one who managed to score the goal.
Of course.
So Derek was head of the PFA at the time. And I said to Derek, is the only chance of getting back to England, because I'd love to go and make a career of it. And basically that's how we went back, recommended me to Wolves, said I've found my successor, and I got a trial. I got a 3-month trial at Wolves, and that's how it basically kicked off.
And it is the West Midlands, and to an extent the East Midlands, where your career was at its pinnacle. What is it about the Midlands? I mean, because, you know, we know about the Northwest and we know about the Midlands from a traditional point of view. But I think the Midlands is probably the most underrated area of the country in terms of football passion. People talk about Newcastle, they talk about Liverpool. People forget just how generational and all and massive the support is amongst Wolves, amongst Villa, amongst even Blues and Albion.
Well, it's amazing, really, that majority of my career and successful times were around the Midlands. And my family, you know, my children were all brought up, although Jason was born in Liverpool, Stephen was born in Nottingham, and Gareth was born in Newcastle. So wherever we went, we seemed to have children. That's probably why my wife said we need to settle down. But I came back to Wolves, and you know, when you look at poignant moments in your career, and I always remember that Bill McGarry, who was the manager at the time, said to me, he said, look, I don't think we're going to sign you, you know. He says, I think we're going to let you go. But there's been 4 or 5 clubs from the lower leagues who's been watching you, who might be interested in signing you at the time. So I said to him, and he said to me, do you want to go back to South Africa? And I said, well, no, I really want to have a go at it and have a go here. So he said, well, I'll tell you what, we've got a practice game today, playing the practice game. And then after the practice game, I'll tell you who the clubs are and we'll put you in touch with them. So we had a practice game. So it was the reserves against the first team. And we beat them 3-1 and I scored all 3 goals. So when we went back to the ground, I got called into the office. And it was, oh, by the way, there's your contract, sign that.
Right.
So it's mainly that from one minute you're being told you might not be taken on. And another moment you're like, all of a sudden you've got a contract. So I signed a 3-year contract at Wolves, which, and it, people say to me, how much did you sign for? I said, I've no idea. I just signed it because I just wanted to play.
Great opportunity.
And that's how it kicked off for me, again, as it were. Well, when I say again, it was really the first time.
Well, I mean, Wolves were a decent club at that time. They were a first
division
side.
They got to the UEFA Cup final. They played Tottenham and lost to Tottenham. Then they got to the League Cup, as you know, and they won that. John Richards scored the goal, and I think it was, they beat Man City 2-1. Because I remember I'd only just signed, and they just won it. So, you know, they won things, and you look at tradition of around the Midlands at the time of who won trophies. And lo and behold, you know, you look at what happened. I ended up going to America again. Because I actually said to Bill McGarry about going back to South Africa to play in the summer, not to go back permanent, just to play in the summer, because I wanted to get more games in. And he said, no, I don't want you to go to South Africa. You're in my plans. And then all of a sudden he said, oh, there's a new franchise in Poland. Do you fancy doing that? So I said, I'll ask my wife, I'll ask Kathy. And Kathy said, yeah, let's go and do it. You know, so we ended up going to Poland, new franchise, new city. I mean, Oregon had never seen soccer before in their life. So all of a sudden, this 15 Brits had gone over to America to play and put Portland on the map, which we did.
Yes.
We ended up putting Portland on the map. And that's where I acquired two nicknames at the time, which no one had seen anyone head a ball. Because in America, they catch the ball.
Yeah.
You know, they don't head the ball. So I ended up heading a few balls into the goal, and this reporter was like dropping the camera as he seen this person heading the ball in the goal. So I got the nickname of the Mad Header and the Wizard of the Nod.
Wizard of Nod. We should have known that down the Villa. That would have been lovely. But we had our own tradition of number nines. We'll come to that later. So Portland Timbers was obviously at the pinnacle of the North American Soccer League. It was a great time. Unfortunately, the NASL sort of lost its momentum in the 80s, but then your career really took off. Just explain to us how you came back to this country and how the sort of Nottingham Forest bandwagon sort of built your career to sort of an unprecedented level.
Vic Crowe was the manager of Portland at the time, and he'd got a phone call from Brighton, which was Peter Taylor, asking me they'd agreed a fee with Wolves, would I agree to go to Brighton, who were in the third division at the time. And Vic was great to me, because he said to me, look, don't jump at anything, just wait and see what material, but just say you want to speak to him. So that's what happened, and in the end Birmingham came in, Freddie Goodwin flew to America and basically signed me, and unfortunately I got stuck in America and couldn't get back for the first four games, which they'd lost. And then I got back, we won the first game, won this next game, drew the next game, and then he got the sack. So that's what I was saying about my career, is that managers getting the sack and someone changing. And Willie Bell took over from assistant manager to manager. And it's obvious from the offset that he didn't really fancy me. And then I had this, they said to me, we'd like you to go to Nottingham Forest and talk to Brian Clough, which is a very daunting prospect. And it took us probably about a couple of weeks, really, to make our mind up.
What was the reticence? Because, I mean, here was, even at that time, a massive football figure. Before all the incredible journey of Nottingham Forest, he'd been at Leeds for his 44 days. He'd done the Brighton journey. He'd been a remarkable manager at Derby County. I mean, if someone like Brian Clough has you on his radar, what was the reticence? What was the 2 weeks about?
The 2 weeks was really about, it was about trying to agree a fee, and also trying to agree terms, basically, because they were a second division team and I was coming from a first division team. It wasn't about the football, because the football, as far as I was concerned, was the be all and end all. But there was just he asked me to take a drop in wages to go from Birmingham to come to, you know, Nottingham Forest. And I was saying to him, why would I take a drop in wages when I could just stay where I was? And then it was thrown backwards and forwards. So in the end, we agreed, basically. So he would argue over £5. and he would, if he won over the £5, and it was a plus for him, it was a feather in his cap. So we ended up agreeing it. So I went to Nottingham Forest and I signed. It's funny because I signed the day I signed for Nottingham Forest. It was on a Tuesday, and I signed. And he said, "Right, I want you to play this afternoon. We've got a reserve game against Wolverhampton Wanderers." I thought, "Yeah, all right, go on." So we were playing against Wolves, and the likes of Phil Parks and lads that I knew at Wolves were all playing the game. And I was playing. He said, "Oh, you're playing up front with a guy called Woodcock." So me and Tony Woodcock, that was our first game we played together. And I didn't have any boots. I borrowed a pair of boots. And I've spoke to the lads a few times about this, because they all come to the stand to watch the game. So they all sit in the stand and they watch me. And I hadn't played for about 3 weeks. I hadn't played a game. I was absolutely awful.
So you weren't match fit?
I was awful. Absolutely awful. And he must have, because Peter Taylor's his assistant now, and he's the one who's recommended me to him. He must have looked at him and said, "What have you got here, you know?" So he said, "No, he'll be all right. Don't worry about it." And, yeah, I've spoke to the lads and everyone was in the stand thinking, "What have we got here, you know?" But it was funny because comes to the Saturday, we're playing Carlisle. He has to make a decision now. Does he play this new signing that he's made, or because of the performance, but he didn't. He played me and we won 5-1 and I had an absolute blinder. I managed to score, got a penalty, had a hand in three of the goals. And that really changed. But Brian Clough, as a manager, just instill this confidence in you. Yes. And he just had a belief in you. And he was always, there was no, all this terminology and all these things that he said about, you know, he'd do this, do that. He was just straightforward, you know. You're the centre forward, score me goals. You're the centre half.
Let's talk about that, because, I mean, he really changed the trajectory of your career for good. He turned you from being a journeyman player, mm-hmm. potentially in lower divisions in new countries like South Africa and the United States, to being an elite player at the top of the English game. Mm. And you're talking about, you know, he took out all the language and he just talked to you in a straight manner. He actually appealed to your character as well, as someone who went about their business and treated football as the be-all and end-all. Mm. And it wasn't just you, it was people like Tony Woodcock, you mentioned, John Robertson, Archie Gemmell, Kenny Burns, Larry Lloyd, all these guys came to Forest and became elite players from nowhere. What was it about Brian Clough?
To sum him up, and it's happened to me, I could have an argument with him at 10-3 and still go out and give 100%. There's not many managers you'd do that for, because he had this unique uniqueness about him, because you knew what you see and what you heard was what you got. He wasn't anything different from anyone else. He was different from everyone else, but you understood what he wanted from you. And where I used to have this bit of an argument with him was, I used to say to him, "I'd like to peel off and go to the far post to make a chance." So he said, "Hey, young man, you and Woodcock, get the near post." So I used to say, "What? I want you to get..." Anyway, this went on for about 3 or 4 weeks. And in the end, I said to him, "Why do you keep telling me to go to the near post?" He says, "Because I've got this daft Irishman who plays number 7, who gets 12 goals a season." He says, "You take everyone to the near post and Martin O'Neill scores all the goals in the far." And he did. Martin scored about, you know. And Martin has always had this thing about him, because he always thought that he didn't like him because he tried to replace him 3 times, like Terry Curran, Sean Hazelgrave. And we used to go for coffee on a Friday, and we used to just drink coffee or tea and have a bacon sandwich on a Friday and talk, you know, football. And Martin used to say, "Oh, he doesn't like me." I said, "Martin, just look at the team sheet. Who's number 7? It's you." So he went, "Yeah, but he doesn't like me." I said, "But you keep getting on the team sheet, so why are you worried? You know, why are you worried about it?" So and Larry was the same. Larry was saying, as a person, you know, he's not someone he'd have a drink with or go and have a drink with, but as a manager, he was everything that he wanted.
So that is the beginnings of the Peter With career. What makes it so extraordinary is what happened next. Look out for part 2 on YouTube, because Peter With was propelled to the big time. But again, big question marks when he signed for a second division club, but with a first division manager, Brian Clough. Look out for part 2 on YouTube as we continue the story of Peter With.